welcome everyone to the Big One Podcast. It's your favorite motorsports podcast here back weekly to talk NASCAR, F1, IndyCar, anything. Local tracks sometimes, depends on if Baby G gets out to one. My name is B-Boy. It's great to be here with you. Follow us at Podcast Big One or email us at podcastbigone@gmail.com. And you too could be featured on this show. Who's with me today?
Baby G is here, and we are ready to get back into some racing. So we're doing the weekly episodes this year. It's been a lot of fun, and looking forward to getting into some storylines, recaps, and upcoming schedule as we always do.
Love it. All right. Well, our sponsor this week is TonyBox. The TonyBox is a great device. It's like a little soft Bluetooth speaker. And what's really, really cool about it is... I don't know why you're writing Tony Box in where I already have the words Tony Box, but Tony Box is, yeah, it's a soft Bluetooth speaker for kids. It's got little ears on it to adjust volume, and then it's got these cute little characters. I'm going to show one or two of them to the camera that you can't see, but this is a little Santa, and this is like a little pirate man. These are called custom Tonys, or Creta Tonys, I forget what they're called. But these ones you can upload your own music to. So we have a Taylor Swift one and a Harry Styles one and an Ed Sheeran one and a Post Malone one because that's what our daughter likes. And then with these kind of ones too, you could there's a lot of free stuff that you can put on them. So you could put a bunch of Christmas music on this one if you wanted to, or a bunch of Christmas stories on this one. And then they have a number of name brand characters like Moana and like the Frozen folks and a lot of Disney characters and stuff on there. They're just really great. Honestly, if you have a kid, you should have a Tony Box. Let your kid control their own music. We use it at bath time. We use it at bedtime. We use it during playtime. We use it to get our daughter to eat her veggies. You know, no more Tony Box if you can't eat your veggies. And she knows what that means. Tony Box, our sponsor for this week.
I might have to be a hero and do a little Tony Box action.
I think you should.
For a birthday coming up pretty soon here. So, yeah, appreciate the tip. And this sponsorship is going to be making money already for this company because they've already got a customer in Baby G.
There you go. It's a good one. It's a really good one. And our daughter did finally learn how to use them like just a little after a year. So it's a great first birthday gift. All right. So let's jump into some storylines. First off, Bowman is back in the 48. But how did he do this week?
He did not do great. It sounded like the team didn't have the setup right, and he was just kind of getting back in the rhythm, but good to see him in the car. Glad to see him out there, and my Ally Racing water bottle that I use at work is back in action. No longer have to be ashamed that my driver's out with vertigo.
Yeah, well, I'm an Ally banker, or not banker, but bank person. I use them as my bank, so they could very easily be a sponsor on this podcast, too, but... yeah, he got caught up in an accident, and that sucks, especially like you said, like he's trying to get in, get some laps, get some rhythm back, and ready to run a full race. That's what he was waiting to be cleared for. Man, dude could have raced the amount of laps that he did here with vertigo. And so I hope the accident doesn't cause anything. He said he's fine, so we'll see him back this week. Hope he gets a good result. NASCAR has adjusted the stage lengths at Talladega. Last week he gave this update that they were going to adjust them. Now we actually know. 98 laps for stage one, so the long stage one. 45 laps for stage two, and 45 laps for the final stage. Cars do not have to pit for fuel in each of the final two stages. Thoughts, Baby G?
I still don't love it. We talked about this last week, and we both weren't on board with it. I don't see how this solves the problem at the super speedways, especially at Talladega, where you really can't even go three wide. It's a narrower track than Daytona. It's two lanes.
No, it's wider. It's wider.
Is it wider? I thought...
It's easier to go three wide.
No. Okay, I thought it was the opposite way around for the other thing. So I still don't know. Like, I think it's... The name of the game is still going to be fuel savings, no matter what the stage lengths were or are. So 98 in the first one, I think you're going to see a lot of riding around. They're going to have to come for gas at some point in that first stage. I would expect you would see no cautions for accidents because, like I said, it's going to be riding around just to get to, we need fuel now, let's go in, spend as little bit of time on pit road as possible. And then you've got these two short sprints, the 45 and the 45. And like I said last week, I still think it's going to be a lot of riding around in the middle of that second stage. And then the third stage is just going to be, at some point, somebody's going to go, and it's going to be crazy. You could literally just have a 45-lap shootout.
I know I ranted on this last week, but I now have to rant again because I just hate the fucking dumb NASCAR fans. Basically, when this got announced, people then were raging just about stages in general. I hate stage cautions. I hate that there's stages, blah, 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 blah. Do you realize that if this was 188 laps, that they would ride around and they would do team strategy and they would pit with each other and save fuel so that they could just get a couple seconds, a couple seconds, a couple seconds, and really only race to the end anyway? They used to do that. They used to run single file for long periods of the race. They don't do that anymore. It's part of because of the car with all the drag and everything. They run in a pack, at least. That maybe you could say, oh, that's simulated racing. I don't know. Guys are still diving up and down when they see a spot because they know they can move up. It's still important for them to race that way. It will still happen where guys will want to take it easy, even in those 45 laps. Yes, they don't have to pit. Yes, they're not saving anything so fuel-wise to try and like get a faster pit stop, but they'll save their energy and their focus and everything else. They will chill when they can chill, and that's just fucking the nature of the beast. That's what these races are. The only one, and it's not technically a super speedway, the only racing like this that doesn't have that happen is Atlanta. So maybe we just need, like, Texas needs to be repaved like Atlanta. We just go away from Daytona and Talladega since everyone's so fucking mad about it. It's going to be a good race. Everyone shut the fuck up. All right, moving on. Some new sponsors for our 2311 folks. You're smiling. I'm glad I was able to make you laugh there. Some new sponsors for our 2311 folks. You want to break it down?
I do. So Tyler Reddick, Bring It On Rockstar Energy Drink as a new sponsor. So if you recall from prior year podcasts, we had the Burger Wars. We had some other wars. Now we got the Energy Drink Wars. So a little bit interesting, too, because the 35, Riley Herbst, has Monster on his car at 2311 quite a bit. But it... Yeah. Another thing that came out today, too, I'll get into this, it's not in the notes, but Tyler Reddick is an indie man driver. He brings sponsorship to 2311.
Yep.
It sounds like, you know, his price of his contract is going up, up, up. I heard upwards of $7 million for when he renews with 2311, so I absolutely love that for Tyler Reddick and his family. These drivers deserve that money, but love to see a new big-name sponsor on the 45 car.
Yeah, agreed. I did see some people complaining and saying, like, oh, look, he's not making that much. Because in the mid-2000s, that was not a lot. Like, a lot of drivers cleared the $10 million mark. But we don't have that money anymore. And for what it's worth, like, the sponsors are tend to be how the drivers get money by doing commercials and doing other things. And so, like, that $7 million is just to drive the car. That's team money. And then you can get a bunch of other money through you know, everything else that you do and all of the sponsorships and marketing dollars that kind of can come your way. So Rockstar is a really good one. I was wondering why Monster wasn't with them this year because he used to drive the you know, the what was it called? The Beast?
Yeah, Beast Unleashed.
It was called Beast. Yeah. And he used to race those, and I actually have a Beast hat, and I love it. You know what? I'll try Rockstar again. I remember Rockstar sponsored someone else that I liked in NASCAR, and I tried a Rockstar, like, it's like a decade ago, and I was like, this is disgusting. I'm a big Red Bull guy, so I was like, this is disgusting. And I vowed never to have a Rockstar again. I guess I have to have one now. And now I have to like Rockstar, even though it's technically it's like a Kid Rock song, right? It sucks. All right, well, another one is Boys and Girls Club is to sponsor their alumni, Bubba Wallace. Bubba was a Boys and Girls Club member when he was a kid. And he has appeared at a lot of different events for them. And has been a kind of proud proponent of the Boys and Girls Club. I'm also a Boys and Girls Club alumnus from when I was very young. I barely remember it. I just remember playing a lot of foosball and there was a gym. That's about it. But it's a really great place, especially for parents that don't have an after-school program. It's a really great place for kids to be able to go, get a little bit of exposure, get a little bit of energy out, and then not annoy their parents quite as much. So, big Boys and Girls Club fan here. And also, the car looks gorgeous. Like, I think that's one of the best-looking cars he has. And he drives, you know, Columbia cars. So, that's, I think that's saying a lot. But what do you think about this?
I love it. I think, like you said, Bubba Wallace is... wrap is amazing. The blue just pops on it, the black and blue. It fits really well. Like you said, I was not a Boys and Girls Club guy, but I was always a after school program. My mom wanted us out of the house in the summer, so Big G and I, we went to summer programs, anything to get you interacting with other kids, learning on your own. Like you said, it was a lot of like sports for us as dudes, but then they also had like math, video games, like art, a lot of cool stuff. So I remember like it was multiple schools that would come together at one central school in another town, and like you would just meet people that down the road, hey, all of a sudden you're playing volleyball against another team, and I'd be like, dude, you look super familiar. Did you go to like this after school or like summer program or whatever? Cool. It's like, yeah, dude, I kind of remember you. Like that stuff sticks with you, so absolutely love it.
I love that. That's awesome. Last final note on Boys and Girls Club. It really is like thought of, I think, as like the kind of like public school alternative for after school programs, because it is like a publicly funded one. But it's really good. I mean, they have mentors, and they have people that are there that are just like watching you not hurt yourself. They like help you with your homework. They, you know, help you with other things that you're trying to achieve. Like, I think it's a really, really good program, and one of the few things that America seems not to defund, which is really great. So, awesome. Well, lastly, we have some crew changes. You want to break those down?
Ryan Blaney is getting some relief on that pit crew, swapping the Jackman with Josh Berry. So this has been something we've been harping on all season. He's lost a ton of positions all year long on pit road, and they finally tried to make a move there, and they're doing some changes to the pit crew.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to say one thing. Blaney's my number two guy, right? Reddick's my number one. And Blaney has been the best driver this year. I know Reddick has all the wins. Blaney's been the best driver so far this year, except for his pit crew. And if he has a really good crew, he may become unstoppable. He may just be like insane. We're very early in the season, so this is just hyperbole for sure. But honestly, this was the only downside to his game so far. So if they can get a crew to match his level of driving and hit the cars that he's being given, look out. I mean, he's going to win a bunch more races this year. He is hitting his perfect stride. And I know he won the championship 2 years ago. He looked better than he did that year. Remember, he didn't win until the Coke 600 that year that we were at. So, he looks really good this year. This is going to be great. Cool. Let's jump into some race recaps. Let's jump into the truck series. Do you want to break that one down? Cause I know you got to watch that one.
Yeah. Truck series at Bristol, stage one winner, Christian Eckes. Stage two winner, Ben Rhodes, and your stage three and race winner was Cup Series driver Christopher Bell. So this one had a ton of Cup drivers in it, 7 in total: Stenhouse, Briscoe, Busch, Chastain, Bell, Suarez, and Hosovar. And I believe this was the most Cup drivers that have ever been in a Bristol truck race.
Yep. Not just Bristol, just truck race.
Any truck race period. In general. Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure, race, yeah. So I said Bristol, but it is any truck race.
And for active Cup drivers that were in this, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got it, love it. So, start of this thing, we had some astronauts returning home. So I had the 2TV setup going, and Artemis 2 splashdown was going on just at the tippy start of this race. So that was cool to see. Mm-hmm. Love that we did the moon exploration going around, and looking forward to maybe landing on the moon in the near future. So, stage one in this thing, both the high side and the low side were working. So the PJ1 has been applied at Bristol for a number of years. They did it again here for the truck race, and that allows kind of the two groove racing. So I don't know if you want to comment on that, because I don't have as much of the history as you do with Bristol. So what's up with this PJ1?
Well, I'll say like old Bristol has a special place in everyone's heart, and definitely, you know, the NASCAR fans that do nothing but complain will always mourn the loss of old Bristol. Was not a progressive banking, but it was a very steep banking. So that meant it didn't matter if you went in on the bottom side or the low side, or the top side or the bottom side. It was all about who was going fastest around, and the bottom side was going to be the faster way around at every track, right? Now that it's a progressive banking, it means, well, if I can go higher and go faster, that's where I want to be, right? So they needed a way for the bottom line to keep it as much speed as possible, or for a guy to be able to make a pass at the bottom. When they first did the progressive banking, the first couple of years, I think it took them 2 or 3 years to start doing things like PJ1. And they didn't actually, PJ1 wasn't a thing when they first got to that. But basically, everyone ran at the top. And it became a weird, funhouse mirror version of what Bristol used to be. Because you used to have to bump guys out of the way on the bottom line, which is fine, because then you bump him and he goes high up on the track and you're past him. When a guy is in your way and he's running to the top and you hit him, he hits the wall and then he slips down into you because you can't get away. There's nowhere to go. So anyway, it was a big mess. It was really tough. It was really difficult to pass, and it just wasn't great. It was still better racing than we kind of have right now, but it's because of the generation of the car. Anyway, then they start applying PJ1 and different things to the bottom. They've had to really, like, figure out how much to apply and when to apply it, and, like, do they run cars over it to kind of work it in. I remember being at Bristol races where they had these, like, these cars that had like almost drag tires on them. They were so big, and they would just run laps. Like they would run the PJ1 in the morning, and they would be out there running laps for like an hour to try and like work the PJ1 into the track and spread it a bit, because it's just a sticky substance, right? Anyway, long story short, PJ1 gives you that second lane, but as the race goes on, it wears into the track and it wears off with the tires, and therefore it does go away. That bottom line is good at the beginning, not so good at the end. So they really have to figure out, do I apply it right before the truck race? Do I apply it before practice? And then do I reapply it during the weekend? Like, how do I get this to be the best and like give me the best racing throughout the entire race? It's a really, really tricky science. But I think they did a good job of it all weekend.
I do as well. Like that it, like you said, the races started out, you had the two lines moving. So moving on into the middle of stage two in this one, we have some Muniz watch. And Ooh. Frankie had a really bad move. He was not clear, dropped his car down, and he wrecked himself and another driver. But he did have that Malcolm in the Middle sponsorship on his car. That so, hey, cool. They got some good advertisement out of it because they were on his wrecked car for a pretty long hard shot there.
Yeah, the series is called Life Still Isn't Fair, and I think it's just like four episodes. It's not even really a series. I don't know if they're doing a season two or anything. But yeah, Life Still Isn't Fair for Frankie Muniz. But honestly, on his own volition. When I saw he wrecked, I was like, please don't let it be him that wrecked his own, like, you know, Malcolm in the Middle car. But, you know, it is what it is. Next up, Ben Rhodes stays out when everyone else pits after the caution. There's a green with four to go. And so he wins the stage. I think that was like a good lesson. People watch this stuff for the O'Reilly series and for the Cup series too. And it was the first lesson of the weekend of like, maybe you don't need tires. And Bristol used to be notorious for not really shredding tires, but for you wanting to have new tires most of the time that you were there. Anything you want to call out there?
Yeah. I mean, don't love that there isn't a lot of tire wear at the track right now for all three series, but at the end of the day, it's like you took the stage points, and then he was going to be right up there probably with a great car driving, but he did take equipment out of the box. So the crew chief is like, oh, sorry, man, like bad call. So it was kind of he took the stage win, got those 10 points, but then kind of set himself back for the rest of the race.
Yeah, definitely. Unintended consequences there. Corey LaJoie was running well, but he got hit with a restart violation when he was inside the top 10, and you know, for those Ram trucks, that's a really good running position. He ended up recovering, I think, pretty well. I'd have to go back and look at where he finished, but I think he finished top 15 at the end of the day. But it is hard with these trucks, and really just at Bristol in general, but it is hard to make up positions when you do get hit with a restart violation or anything else that's gonna, you know, put you to the back of the pack. So tough for him.
Let's talk about Kyle Busch. So Kyle Busch got out front in this thing, and he was looking really, really good. But then there was a caution. In all race, he had a strategy going where he was, like, light on fuel. So he was trying to conserve as much as he could. Mm-hmm. Caution comes out, so he's shutting the engine off, you know, rolling a little bit. Then he just could not get the thing refired. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where if you can't keep pace with the pace car as the first place car, other cars are just allowed to go by you, and you lose those spots. It's not like, oh, sorry, fire it back up and then speed back up there to first. He dropped all the way back to 10th, and then he must have been disputing the position because they then rode around for three laps when it was basically like, we're ready to go green, and Kyle Busch was not getting his ass in line. And this is what we said the other week, like, some of these cautions, NASCAR needs to be like, if your ass is not in line when we're going green, you're coming to the pits and you're losing a lap. Like,
yeah,
especially as a Cup Series driver down two series, just get your ass in line, Kyle Busch, and run the rest of this fucking race, because it's like we're just driving around on that bullshit.
Yeah, this is where, like, I hate stewards in F1, and so I hate to bring up the term, but, like, this is where stewards and kind of, like, having this, like, iron fist really does help, because it just keeps everyone in line. Like, this is bullshit. And Kyle Busch should have been like, oh, I shouldn't be 10th, I should be 8th, I should be back to first. Like, I was just trying to get my car restarted. Like, I don't, fuck, you're now at the back. I'm now going to hold you a lap. I don't care. Get that, you're done. I know we hit this really hard last week, so I'll move on. But big event here, because it really was the Eckes and Heim show for a lot of the race. Well, Christian Eckes had enough of Corey Heim. Corey Heim did race him pretty hard. I don't think he ever stepped over the line, but Christian Eckes did. He turns down and basically gets a right hook on Heim and takes him out. And it's right off a restart, so everyone's pretty bunched up. Takes out Honeycutt and Riggs, who were also top five cars for most of that race. No 350K triple truck bonus. We had to have a red flag. This is a big deal. I mean, like, I like Eckes. I really do, but I'm a Heim guy since he's a 2311 guy, and because he's just fucking awesome. And I did think that it was a right hook. I know the booth broke it down a little bit, but, like, you know, let's be serious. That Fox truck coverage booth is, like, super weak. And the only person that was calling it out was Austin Cindric, and he was right. I mean, it was a bit of a right hook. And you know what? They didn't do anything about it this week, so maybe they're willing to let it slide, but I'm going to keep that in the back of my mind, Christian Eckes, and definitely if I'm Corey Heim.
I want to jump in on this one because Corey Heim was extremely mature in his interview after this incident. He was like, look, I raced him really hard. I thought it was clean. Then he said, I didn't think Eckes did anything over the line. It was just we were racing each other really hard, and it happens at a short track like this. So I thought that was a really mature and impressive interview. He was like calm and collected and like really well spoken. I was like, wow, like this is the guy that can't get sponsorship to get up to the O'Reilly's or the Cup Series. Like,
yeah,
if this is the guy can talk like this in the heat of the moment where he just lost $350,000 potentially because he got wrecked, like I want that guy in my car and I need to find him some sponsorship.
Yeah, let's I want to be honest here because we've talked about it a ton of times. I don't think it's necessarily that Heim can't find sponsors. I think it's that Heim's sponsors that he's worked with in the past are all JGR affiliated, and he's being blackballed by the guy that ends up getting his first win in Cup this weekend. So anyway, bad weekend for Heim just overall, if you're considering though that bit of rivalry as well. But Christopher Bell took the lead with 60 to go after that accident, and just kind of, or actually no, it was before that accident happened, I think a little bit after that. And some really good restarts from there on. The trucks were really, really hard to handle. And Christopher Bell did not have the best car all day. But with everything that happened with Heim and Honeycutt and Riggs getting taken out, he did take control of the race late, and then he hit every restart that he needed to hit from there on and wins the race. All right, let's move on to O'Reilly. I know you didn't get to watch this, so maybe I can just talk about it. Kind of, I didn't do the breakdown that you do every week, so I appreciate everything that you do here. I should have went back and done it here, but stage one, we had Kyle Larson winning that one. Stage two, we had Kyle Larson winning that one. And guess what? Stage three for the race winner, it wasn't Kyle Larson. And guess what? You're going to hear about that in Cup Series too. Kyle Larson was the guy to beat, but there were a couple other cars that were really strong, and when it came down to it, the JGR guys of Allgaier and Connor Zillish just mixed it up with Kyle Larson just enough to kind of hold him back on the last couple restarts. And Connor Zillish is the one that gets the advantage at the late in the race and gets to win. Any comments on what you did get to see about this?
Yes, the only thing I did get to see was the last 22 laps or so. So I was out of town with some familial obligations. We ended up getting back to the hotel. I don't remember what time it was, like 7, 7:30 after our family event. And we got this little Irish pub at the hotel, and lo and behold, you get like two free drinks a person for staying at this hotel, which is like the most Wisconsin thing ever, right? You check into your hotel and they're like, here's some comp drinks at the Irish bar. And I'm like, there's an Irish bar in this hotel in, like, you know, somewhere in Wisconsin. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, so we came back, had a couple of drinks. We're watching the Frozen Four, where my Wisconsin Badgers unfortunately lost in the national championship to Michigan. Hated it. But they just kind of collapsed at the end. But getting back to the racing, like, we did see the final 22 laps up on a little TV at the corner bar. So somebody must have requested CW Network over the air and was watching some racing at the bar. So that was kind of cool.
I love it. I thought that place looked really cool. I didn't know it was in the hotel, I think, when you posted it, or maybe I didn't read your message or something. But yeah, it looked really cute. I'll say, like, I was in Twin Falls, Idaho, and they similarly did the free drink thing, and I thought that was really sweet. And that little bar that they had there and the food there actually was really, really good for, like, a random – it was, like, a cheap hotel, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's
like
what this was, too. So. Yeah,
go figure.
Love it. Small town America. We're coming back.
We're coming back. But, yeah, my only comments really on this race, without breaking a lot of it down, is I actually thought it was the least – I thought the cars and the racing action was the least good all weekend. I thought the O'Reilly cars do, like, they race pretty well here, but, like, I don't know. It just felt like the guys couldn't pass a lot of the time. I felt like there were the front runners, and then there was everyone else, and it just really wasn't that interesting. I also thought, we normally compliment the CW coverage, and I really do like the announcers. They bring a lot of energy. They weren't at the racetrack, and I found the same problem when they were at Martinsville, too. They weren't at the racetrack covering it. And when you're at Bristol and you're at Martinsville, there's so much else going on at the track, like so many other passes. And that's why if I recommend anyone to go to any type of event or any type of NASCAR race, I'd probably say Atlanta, number one. But number two or three, I'd probably say Bristol or Martinsville, if the racing is good. And if you can go and you can go watch the O'Reilly series, I bet there was more action going on, but you couldn't see it because the CW is just showing you one little thing at a time. And I thought, unfortunately, I actually made the O'Reilly race my worst race of the three, but overall, like, I'd still give it like a 60. So
Cup Series race at Bristol, let's get into it. So stage one winner, Kyle Larson, stage two winner, Kyle Larson. And we've got a big one, your stage three and race winner, Big G's number one guy, Ty Gibbs, breaks through for his first win in the NASCAR Cup Series.
Woo! I'm still furious that Big G likes Ty Gibbs. Like, it's just, I hate it. But it was gonna happen eventually. I think we thought it might have happened sooner. Then at one point I thought maybe it won't happen at all. I might have even had that as a hot take at some point, at least in a text message. But this year he's run really well. And definitely when he was up there late in the race, I was rooting against him hardcore. I definitely said some things that I don't regret what I said, but I think he's a two-faced person, and so I made some jokes about that. But I'll say, really enjoyed his celebration with his mom. I thought that was really cool. I thought it was cool to see her ride in the car. And Joe Gibbs was definitely very, you could tell how emotional he was. And I do like Coach Gibbs a lot, so. Cool. Let's break this down. Talk about some of the events.
Yeah, I love it, man. The first thing that I've got on the notes here is Fox misses Larson passing Blaney in stage one for the lead. And all of a sudden, I'm like, Blaney's in first? He was in second. Yeah. Like, what happened? Yeah. And they're like, oh, by the way, we've had a pass for the lead. I'm like, what the fuck were we showing? Like,
yeah, they were like five laps late on that.
It was insane. I'm like, Blaney's up front, and like they haven't said anything about it. Like, literally asleep at the wheel. So. Mm-hmm. Continue to love the Fox coverage, as we always do on the big one here. And then Christopher Bell, unfortunately, had a spin in stage two. He hit the wall, and then he was just battling that all day long. So a really, really mm-hmm. tough race for Christopher Bell because he had that damage. And he was fighting so hard to get back into it and just overdriving the car and really struggled all day.
Yep. There was a huge pileup with SVG, Bowman, and Nemechek. SVG just lost it on the top line, which we saw a number of people do. Chase Elliott, who just won a week ago, happened to him a little bit later in this race. We'll talk about that. Pretty tough incident. Like we were talking about, Bowman was just coming in and trying to run good laps. He does do pretty well at Bristol normally, but ends up, I guess, messing with his suspension enough, because I know the toe link was broken, but they can replace those. Messed with the suspension enough, he was out for the race, and he finished at last. And then Nemechek, too, another guy that I think does pretty well at Bristol normally, and this is a track that team can actually, like Legacy, can actually have some good finishes taken out as well. So SVG, it's getting better at ovals, but still has a little bit more to learn.
Let's get back to the Blaney crew conversation that we teased earlier. So end of stage two, he loses five spots from that first place qualifying spot as well. So he had the number one pit stall, where it's just literally you drive in there, your crew gets it done, you drive straight out, and boom, you should win the race off pit road every time. Mm-hmm. Interesting stat on the Fox broadcast, he has lost 82 spots on pit road this season, and that's 30 more than any other driver. So part of that, though, is he is running up front all the time, and because his crew is consistently a little bit slower than the other crews,
he's losing.
Like, he's just literally losing 3 to 4 spots every single stage, so that just stacks up 8 races or whatever we are into the season. So that's that, though, man. That's why they made that change that we talked about in storylines.
Well, and I'll say it wasn't just that stat, and this is a compliment to the Fox crew, because one, they had that one ready to go. The good storylines, actually, I've seen that about Fox this year. I think they're following storylines and, like, analytics-based storylines a lot better, because normally they're just like, her, it's Clint Boyer's in the booth, you know? This has been a lot better this year. They showed that, and then they also showed the average pit times of the Penske, other Penske cars, and the Penske-affiliated cars, which Penske trains the crews for, and basically showed how bad Blaney's crew is versus crews that are paying for Penske's people to come and pit them. Blaney is your technically your bell cow over these last several years. Like, fucking make some changes. I know they changed one crew member. I can't imagine it's just one guy. I would be changing a lot more if I could. I get too, where, you know, if someone's paying for your business and then you're like, hey, actually the one I gave you is too shiny, take this like dull one, they're probably not gonna pay you for them anymore. Anyway, metaphor aside, Blaney came out, was dominating in stage three. He was dominating a lot of the race, for what it's worth. But then we have a Zillish spin, and you say Blaney comes out in front because he had built a 2-second lead. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so he was really checking out of the field a little bit at like a short track. Like, you mm-hmm. know, my point here was, like, he was 2 seconds ahead of the field when the caution came out, so everybody comes down to pit lane, and then because he had that 2-second buffer, he was, like, in the pits a little earlier, then he was able to kind of stay out front.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Cool. Chase Elliott spun with 27 to go. I like that you commented my text here where I said no talent. Chase fans, don't blow us up. I mean, do blow us up because we want to hear from you anyway, but that's totally a joke. We talked about how it was a little hard for these cars to stay on track, and I do, again, want to compliment Harvick here. I think he actually does bring, like, recency bias to his commentary, and he's like, "You look, these cars are in line until the minute that they're not, and as soon as you start to lose it because you pushed it slightly too hard over that edge, you're gone. It doesn't matter if you're Chase Elliott or Kevin Harvick or anyone else. It could happen to anyone." So it did happen. I just thought we were looking forward to a good finish, and Blaney was probably going to win, and that sucks because he ends up not winning. Let's talk about why.
Yeah, let's talk about why. So there was that caution. Blaney kind of goes down again a couple spots because of his crew, but then let's get into Kyle Busch and Herbst here. So early in this race, Herbst ended up kind of spinning Kyle Busch out. It didn't look like it was that big of a deal, but he did get into him and spun it out. And then with 4 laps to go, Kyle Busch literally just pays back and drives right into Riley Herbst and spins him. Yep. And it looked like on this one, man, Ty Gibbs was up front when this happens. And I am immediately like, oh, shit. Like, guy's going to win his first race. Kyle Busch way the hell in the back of the field. I don't know. He was probably in the mid-20s where he's been all season. That's gonna cost Ty Gibbs a win. It was because Ty Gibbs stayed out. They made the call, so they didn't have fresh tires, but he was like far enough out that it was like, okay, he's probably gonna bring this thing home and win. But then when you've got Blaney and Larson right on your ass with like a couple of laps to go and he holds him off, it was a really impressive drive by Ty Gibbs to just keep his composure. I feel like last year he would have just flew off the handle, like, what the F? Like, he would have been queuing up that radio all pissed off and made a mistake. But he really did a nice job holding off the field and getting that first win.
And I'll say I think a lot of that is the confidence that he's been building this year. And you know, with we've been talking about Josevar and what it's going to take for him to get over that hump. I think when you finish consistently at the front and you don't doubt yourself getting to the end of these races and what you're going to do to win them, I think that's what it takes. And to do that, you have to be consistent. It's the same thing as they say, slow is fast, or slow is smooth and smooth is fast. That's basically what it means. I mean, if Josevar could do the same thing and rattle off a couple top fives in a row, just have solid races, don't overstretch one of those cars to try and win a race and wreck yourself, because then that momentum's gone. You can do what Ty Gibbs just did, too. Exactly like you said it. I actually think there were two accidents here that we didn't necessarily cover. There was the one with Herbst and Kyle Busch, but then I think there was another one, right, that caused the actual green-white checkered when they had the restart. So Ty Gibbs had to do it multiple times in a row, but two in a row right there at the very, very, very end with Larson and Blaney both trying to get it done. And Blaney's car was the best car on track, period. Ty Gibbs probably was the second best car. But Reddick did a really good job of shooting up to fourth on the second to last restart. And at one point, he got to the inside of Ty Gibbs on the second to last restart. And I thought, oh my God, Tyler Reddick's going to fucking do it again. Like, just steal a win out from under someone else. But I'm glad Ty Gibbs won. I'm glad that he can get this monkey off his back and he can be what he's supposed to be, even if I don't like what that is. Let's jump into some other series real quick. First off, F1, we're off for April. I'm thinking that maybe we might try and bring in a segment with little B-Boy, I guess. We have to come up with a nickname for him. But, you know, he's really big into F1 these days. He has been watching the races and listening to the podcasts and definitely breaking down exactly how they're racing and all the drama with me. And so the representation that you've been hearing is a lot from him. But I'd love to kind of get his take on where we're at with the F1 season so far. They're not supposed to be off for April, for what it's worth. It's because the two races in April were supposed to be Middle Eastern races, and so therefore they are canceled. We'll be back at Miami May 1st to the 3rd, right over B-Boy's birthday weekend. So that'll be fun. But nothing to talk about until then. IndyCar. Let's talk about IndyCar. What's going on?
Before we get to IndyCar, that sounds expensive. We're going to have consulting spend now on the Big One podcast.
Yikes, you know, dude. Sometimes you got Tony Box money coming in. Sometimes you got to spend to make money.
Yeah, we're going to have to step up our sponsorship game like 2311 did this week. So first thing on IndyCar, as you recall, there's been quite a bit of shakeup at the top of IndyCar from a competition perspective after the incidents last year with the attenuators at the Indy 500. So Roger Penske basically cleaned house on the rules and regulations team. So they brought in former Ganassi or current Ganassi engineering executive Mike O'Gara is the IndyCar VP of Competition and Race Engineering. So we've got the new car coming to IndyCar in 2028 is the plan. Mm-hmm. And then this guy is also going to be leading up the technical portion of the rule book. So this sounds like a pretty big deal, a guy that's going to lead the new car and the rule book. So want to make a good hire here. I don't know who this guy is, but let's see. Hopefully he does well.
This goes in line with some of Penske's shakeups in the off season, where they had done investigation into their own competitive, like competition, and had fired some people internally, right, as well. And I don't know how much like correlation there is between these two things, but I'd have to imagine there is some, and that's why they went with a Ganassi engineering executive and not a person that they trusted within Penske, like Tim Sindrick, for instance. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Up next,
where are we at next for?
Yeah, IndyCar. We're going to a good one, the Acura Long Beach Grand Prix, Sunday at 5:30 Eastern. So this is one of those really cool IndyCar races. I'm looking forward to seeing this one. A lot of the drivers love it. Beautiful part of the country. Going to be a good race, hopefully, out there at Long Beach.
Nice. Yeah, that's gonna be awesome. Let's go into NASCAR because we are at one of the best tracks on the damn schedule. We're at Kansas. You've been there. It's very, very good for the Cup Series. This is just the type of intermediate track that they just race so well. It was last year, right, that we had, or no, it was 2 years ago that we had the Larson Buescher finish, the closest finish in NASCAR history. So maybe we could see that again. That'd be pretty sweet. But the Cup is at the Avant Health 400 at 2 Eastern on Sunday. So early for us West Coasters, 11 a.m. Crazy. And then the O'Reilly Series is doing the Kansas Lottery 300 at 7 Eastern on Saturday. So they're night racing and then early day racing. That's an interesting trade-off there, but it's going to be fun. I think both races are going to be phenomenal.
Previous winners for this thing, 2025, Kyle Larson. That was the one that Big G and I saw live. It was honestly a runaway for Larson the entire race. And then in the fall race in 25, you had Chase Elliott. 2024, Larson and Chastain. The interesting thing about Kansas is last year, Big G and I, we got a trucker race on the Saturday. So interesting that they're doing the O'Reilly series here instead of the trucks that we saw last year.
True.
So pretty
this
cool.
Is true, yeah.
I would love to see the O'Reilly guys at the Kansas Motor Speedway because, like you said, very cool track, mile and a half. They've got the Hollywood Casino out there. The amenities were just okay, in my opinion, for all the tracks I've been to, but it is what it is, right? I'm there for the race. I could really care less. There's a midway. There's the haulers. The star of the show, though, was the, I think it was called Turn 3 or Turn 2 Sports Bar and Grill out there in the Hollywood Casino. So we actually watched Cup qualifying from the casino. They have a huge sports bar up there. It overlooks the track, outdoor patio. Love it. Great track, great city if you've never been to Kansas City.
Nice. Yeah, I have been through Kansas City. I've gotten some barbecue. But I've never actually stopped in, so I don't know much about the town or anything else. So I'll take your word for it. One thing to note here with these previous winners, notice all Chevys. Obviously, like, Chevy got the hump, or whatever the term is, hump off their back, thing off their chest, I don't know, with Chase Elliott's win at Martinsville. But otherwise, like, they have not looked that great so far this year, besides Hendrick. Hendrick does have three of the four last wins at Kansas, but I'd be interested to see, at our first true intermediate race, how will Chevy do? My prediction is fine, but not great. I think we'll see the Hendrick guys up front, but I don't think they'll win. I think a Toyota will win. Toyota used to dominate at Kansas for a number of years, and I think the 2311 guys, both Bubba and Reddick, are my two favorites. Do you have any favorites for this race?
Yeah, I really think Larson's going to be excellent again. He has been dominant here for the last couple years. Oh, man, these mile and a halfs are kind of anybody's game, though. There's a lot of teams that are really dialed in on the mile and a halfs that, like, Denny Hamlin, too. He's been really pretty solid at some of these mile and a halfers, but...
Don't overlook RFK. RFK's been excellent. Some of these,
Man, this is anybody's game. I think this is going to be, hopefully, one of the better races of the season so far. Looking forward to it.
I think it will. All right, let's jump into Baby G Reads the Standings.
First place continues to be Tyler Reddick with 386 points. Second place, Mr. Consistency, Ryan Blaney with 324. So he is 62 points behind. So that cushion for Tyler Reddick with those wins is still
doing
him good, but it is getting smaller by the week. Third place, Denny Hamlin. Fourth place, your winner from Bristol, Ty Gibbs, moving up two spots to fourth place. So let's pause here because Ty Gibbs has been like top five in four or five races in a row. And you can see that he's just been climbing on these standings. Fifth place, Chase Elliott. Sixth, Kyle Larson. Then we've got William Byron, Bubba Wallace, Christopher Bell, Chris Buescher in 10th, Brad Keselowski in 11th. Then we've got Joey Logano, Carson Hocevar, Ryan Preece, Daniel Suarez, and SVG still hanging on to 16th. place, 1 point above my guy Chase Briscoe, who moved up another four spots this week. So like we've said, Briscoe is going to be up there, and he is clipping off some points in these last few races.
Yeah, the cream rises there. He'll definitely be in. So cool. A couple things I'm noticing here is we talked about the top fives and top tens, and that Tyler Reddick and Ty Gibbs were tied going into this past week's race. Well, Ty Gibbs won, so he got a top five and a top ten and a win. But guess what? Tyler Reddick finished top five, too. So they're still our leaders for top fives and top tens. The one thing that I really noticed here is William Byron had a really bad race. He only dropped two spots because there was such a cushion at the like top five guys and then everyone else. But notice who's in the top five now. All of the guys that have won. That's what winning will do. Those extra 15 points doesn't sound like a lot, but it really does matter. And you're also seeing the guys that are consistent week in, week out are also the ones eking out wins. I don't know if that has anything to do. We're still early on in this experiment of the no win and in. But maybe people aren't going to be taking so many Hail Mary shots. And therefore, we'll see less random winners. You know, overall, I think we might see a lot more of the consistency where the guys that win are the guys that are in the top 15 or 20 in points. And you won't see the guy that's 32nd that just happens to get a Hail Mary win. Just a prediction. Other thing that I noticed, Bubba Wallace broke his four-way tie for 8th place. And now he is solidly in 8th place. So doesn't look so bad what he did to Carson Hocevar a couple weeks ago. So I think that's it. Any call-outs from you?
No call-outs in the standings, but I do have a call-out for the Kansas race. So there is some pending...
weather.
How do we call it? Weather, yeah. So the Midwest, man, it's been crazy out here. Like where I'm at in Wisconsin, we've had absolutely insane rain, multiple inches, multiple days in a row. We had a tornado touchdown like 30 miles west of where I am, which
wow.
we've never had tornadoes in Wisconsin, and I've heard tornado sirens 3 times in the last 4 days, and it sounds like something's coming again tomorrow. So there is a lot of activity moving through the Midwest, and it sounds like Kansas might be right in the line of fire on that. So let's hope we don't have to be racing on a Monday or Tuesday, and we can get this thing in as scheduled on Sunday afternoon.
Hey, you read my mind. I was going to use this as my sign-off, was just, if you do listen to this, you're going to Kansas, be safe. You know, that is part of Tornado Alley. They have been saying for years that Tornado Alley is becoming a long, straight line, and it is extending up into the Midwest, and it's going further north. I think that might be true. But if you're anywhere, stay safe. I'll say, like, the weather that you guys are getting that you're talking about, I got it yesterday. I was sitting and downstairs. I have a lot of windows, and I have skylights and stuff, and we started getting hail. We don't get storms in the Pacific Northwest at all. Like, when we hear thunder, it's, like, really exciting because we only get, like, 2 thunderstorms a year. So that hail came out of nowhere. It was a sunny day. Comes in, bunch of rain, hail, and then goes back to being sunny. It was a very interesting, like, 30 minutes. But further north of us, it was, like, baseball-sized hail. There was some snow, I think, in the mountains a little bit. And then there were water spouts, which are a very rare and really cool thing. But not cool if they happen right above your boat or whatever, because you will probably die. Look them up. They're kind of sweet to look at, though. But yeah, weird weather for us, which means y'all get the weird weather 2 or 3 days later. So good luck and Godspeed.
Appreciate
with
it.
With that, I want to take us out. This has been the Big One Podcast, where you can hear about weather and other things. If you want to follow us at Podcast Big One on Twitter, and email us at podcastbigone@gmail.com. This has been B-Boy.
This has been Baby G.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.